Our next guest, he's Andy Larson from Salt City Hoops. Thursdays right here on ESPN 700, 7 to 9 with Ben Anderson. Also read him at KSL.com and follow him on Twitter at Andy B. Larson. Andy, hey, how are you, man? What's going on?
Hey, doing well. Not much. It's a busy day for me, as you know.
Excited for the draft, I'm sure. What do you make of Kyle Kuzma's chances to get drafted in the first round, and would the Jazz consider him?
You know, they're pretty decent. I think at this point it's probably more likely that he does go in the second round, but I think he's kind of fit the prototype, or at least is presenting himself as the prototype of the kind of power forward that NBA teams need right now, which is, you know, that stretch playmaking power forward. I hear that the San Antonio Spurs like him, depending on who else is available at 29. And I would say that would probably be his most likely spot to go in the first round if he does.
Andy, let's talk some Utah Jazz, because that's what you specialize in. They, of course, have the 24th and 30th pick. Reports have emerged as to whether or not the Utah Jazz may try and package those two picks with a player. Talk to us about that. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, they're trying to move all over in this draft. I don't think they want to come home with four rookies at the end of the night. And so, you know, I think you're going to be seeing a trade from the Jazz tonight. It's just kind of what ends up happening. Bunch of different things are on the table right now. First of all, they are looking to acquire a point guard that would either replace George Hill or be play alongside him potentially if they were able to re-sign him in free agency. They're looking at between Patrick Beverley and Ricky Rubio. Those two players are apparently relatively far down the road in trade negotiations with those two teams, the Houston Rockets and the Minnesota Timberwolves, for either Beverley or Rubio. You know, it's not clear at all that, you know, they will make that trade or anything like that. But, you know, as far as those conversations, they definitely have happened. Now, as far as they also allegedly, this is being reported by the Deseret News, is Jody Genesee. They're also looking for a shooter in this NBA draft, maybe packaging those 24 and 30 picks to get up to somewhere in the 15th to 18th slot and try to get a shooter, whether that would be someone like Luke Kennard, OG Anunoby. There are a couple different options out there if they are able to move up, or maybe they're trying to get Donovan Mitchell, a prospect who really likes the Utah Jazz, and the Jazz like him back. So a lot going on in terms of the Jazz being able to trade their picks today, and I believe that something ends up happening.
Andy, in your opinion, what's the best-case scenario if the Jazz have to pick at 24?
I think the best-case scenario is one of the big men fall down in this draft, and I think that's going to happen just based on how heavy with big men this draft is, whether that be someone like a Justin Patton from Creighton, or you look at, say, TJ Leaf. You know, if someone decides that he's not worth their pick and he falls down to 24, there's some talent there at that big man spot, and, you know, the Jazz could use big men beyond Derek Favors and Rudy Gobert.
Andy, hypothetically speaking, before we move on to bigger and better things, I guess, if the Jazz were able to put number 24, number 30, and, say, a Derek Favors on the table, how high a draft pick should they be expecting to get in return for something like that?
I mean, not that high. I think you're looking like late lottery, mid-teens with that kind of thing. I mean, that none of those pieces are on their own all that valuable. And I get that Jazz fans like Derek Favors a lot, and understandably so. He was, you know, a top scorer for this team for a few years, near all-star even 2 years ago. But the truth is, last year, with his injuries, brought his value down a lot. And now he's only got 1 year left on his contract until he's a unrestricted free agent next summer. So you look at that as kind of a middling asset with some value. And then 24 and 30, yeah, I mean, you'd kind of expect to trade up to the 18 to 20 slot in a normal draft just based on packaging those two picks together. So not a whole lot. Maybe, again, you're looking at maybe the late lottery, mid-teens if you package those three things.
In your opinion, what does the future hold for Frank Jackson as an NBA player, the young fella at a Lone Peak High School? Do you have an NBA comparison for him?
Ooh, comparison is hard. I think he's got a high upside and a low floor, kind of a big swing there of to what Frank Jackson could be. And you know, some of it depends on how this broken foot heals as well, but I think he does go in the first round tonight. I from everything I hear, that a lot of teams like his combination of athleticism and shooting that could turn out to be something in this year's draft. And it's not something that a lot of different prospects offer right now. Like I said, the wings and point guards at the end of the draft, there's a lot of scarcity there. So I think some team reaches for him in the first round, whether that be I could see the Jazz taking him at 24 or 30. I could also see any of the teams, heck, from 25 to 29 taking him as well. I think he's a coveted pick. There was some rumor that Oklahoma City wanted him too at 21. That would be a big reach for Jackson, but they kind of go by the beat of their own drum anyway. So we'll see if they go with the lone peak guy at 21.
Andy Larson from Salt City Hoops on with us now on ESPN 700. In your opinion, do the Jazz have a bigger priority as far as positions of need? I mean, do they need a point guard more so than they need a stretch four?
That's a great question. I think they're looking for either, and I think it kind of depends on the market, what's available out there. I think there are probably more power forwards that they may be able to afford in this year's free agency, and so it's a more natural fit to try to trade for a point guard, if that makes sense. You look at, like I said, Patrick Beverley, Ricky Rubio available on the point guard market, and fewer stretch power forwards available, whereas there are a few in free agency guys like Patrick Patterson. So I think that probably just makes sense to go that way based on who's available rather than try to force a trade for a power forward now.
Another local cat that is hoping to hear his name called, Eric Meeker, of course, worked out for the Utah Jazz. I haven't seen his name on a lot of these mock drafts. A lot of people out there think he's going to go undrafted. What have you heard from him? How did his workout go? And are the Utah Jazz potentially looking at picking up a local kid in Eric Meeker?
Yeah, I mean, the Jazz liked his workout, but from everything I hear, that he's unlikely to be drafted today. I mean, the biggest thing for NBA teams is just how old he is. 23 years old with not a whole lot of college experience to show for it, and not the kind of college production that gets you drafted as a 23-year-old player either. So I think, he's a guy that teams will absolutely be calling to see if they can add them to their summer league squads, and maybe even, with a training camp offer at the beginning of next year. But I certainly don't see him being drafted today. It's possible, I suppose. I put it 10 to 20% chance, but I just don't think it's all that likely.
The Jazz have said they don't want to give a max deal to George Hill at this stage in his career. Now that the Brooklyn Nets have their point guard of the future with D'Angelo Russell, what do you make of the free agent market outside of Utah for George Hill?
Yeah, it's definitely shrinking, which helps the Jazz's case a little bit. You look at Brooklyn obviously getting D'Angelo Russell, like you said, and then Philly trading for their point guard as well, trading for the number one pick, and again, presumably drafting Markel Fultz. That two teams that we thought were going to be giving max or near max contracts to free agent point guards this year are all of a sudden no longer on the market for those point guards. So George Hill may have overplayed his hand a little bit by rejecting this extension that Jazz offered him during the season and preferring to go into free agency, thinking he was going to get something like a Mike Conley deal, when in fact it looks like he's not going to be getting that max based on how many different other teams are out there. Now, there are still going to be people who are interested in signing George Hill, whether that be San Antonio who wants to bring him in, or even some bad teams like Sacramento. I could see them giving a lot of money for George Hill and trying to have him change their culture in some way. But in terms of the market, it's rapidly shrinking, and that only helps the Jazz keep George Hill if they want to come July.
Andy, I caught you tweeting earlier, and I need you to basically explain to all of our listeners about how Kristaps Porzingis to the Celtics could potentially impact Gordon Hayward. And if you don't mind going a few steps further than that and just telling everybody, is there any Gordon Hayward news out there, any potential trades that could impact Gordon Hayward, like the Porzingis to the Celtics trade?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're a Jazz fan right now, you're rooting against the Boston Celtics, acquiring talent, acquiring stars that make it more likely for Gordon to sign with the Celtics. So probably the best player available and also the cheapest player available is Kristaps Porzingis, who's still on his rookie deal and would be under Celtics control for the next 5-6 years. And that really means that they have the chance to put together not only a good team, but a team that would be good for a long time. So you can imagine really easily a starting lineup next season of Isaiah Thomas, Avery Bradley, Gordon Hayward, Kristaps Porzingis, and Al Horford all playing in that starting lineup. That would probably be the favorites to win the Eastern Conference, even with how good the Cleveland Cavaliers are. So that's a potential danger. And even if the Celtics were able to trade for Porzingis, they'd still have easily able to open up the cap room for Gordon Hayward. So if they trade for Jimmy Butler or Paul George, it becomes a little bit more difficult for them in order to do that. They have to probably trade say Avery Bradley or Jay Crowder or Jaylen Brown or some combination of those guys who make a little bit of money just to open up the cap space to do that. But if they are able to trade for Porzingis, it's tough for the Celtics to, or it's going to be tough for the Jazz to keep Gordon Hayward. As far as his decision goes, it's just, from everything I've heard, he hasn't made up his mind yet. He's reluctant to commit to either the Celtics or the Jazz. Obviously, Miami's kind of in that mix as well. I think he really does want to go into this free agent period and listen to everyone's offers and their what they have to say with an open mind and then make his decision in the first couple of weeks of July.
Derek Favors has to have made well over $40 million in his NBA career. Do you buy that he's putting his market, his house on the market here in Utah just because he wants to downsize a little bit?
Yeah, so I reported that earlier today that he had put his house on the market in North Salt Lake on Tuesday. And, yeah, that's the word is that he wants to downsize. You know, I think from everything I hear, he doesn't know that he's going to be moved, right? Like, he still has another year under contract. And so I think there's some possible stuff that would make him want to move even here in the Salt Lake Valley. He did list the home for sale last summer as well, and it just expired. He wasn't able to sell it. So, you know, it's, I guess, within the realm of plausible deniability that he's listing his house not because he knows he's going to be moved this offseason. That being said, I do think that it is likely that the Jazz move Derek Favors at some point during the summer, but he doesn't know that at this point, and he's just looking for the best situation for him to live in, I guess, with regard to his house.
Is Chauncey Billups going to be the next GM out there in Cleveland, Andy?
Maybe. It's a weird situation. I mean, obviously, first of all, just letting go of David Griffin, who's the architect of these championship squads, is such a weird move to begin with. And then that Dan Gilbert has this friendship and belief in Chauncey Billups, who's never been a general manager. It's a little bit weird. But, you know, they did go ahead and offer that deal to Chauncey Billups to be the general manager of the Cleveland Cavaliers by multiple reports. And then it's apparently whether or not Chauncey decides to accept the deal. And I guess if I'm him, he's worried about two things: his friendship with Ty Lue and whether or not LeBron will stay long-term in Cleveland. But I don't see another team that would necessarily offer him the GM role for an NBA team right away with his level of experience. So, you know, if I'm him, I'm taking over the NBA Finals squad. And look, it's going to be hard. If LeBron doesn't stay, it's going to be tough sledding. But on the other hand, it's still a situation that, you know, 15, 20 other NBA execs would die to have there in Cleveland.
You mentioned the Patrick Beverley rumor that the Jazz may be interested in the Houston Rockets point guard there. Is there a situation where the Jazz could go after just any number of free agent point guards? Or, in your opinion, is the Gordon Hayward situation and him re-signing with the Jazz contingent upon the Jazz also locking down George Hill?
No, I don't. You know, I don't know that their tie between Gordon Hayward and George Hill is so strong that, you know, if Gordon resigns and George does, or vice versa. I think the bigger deal is that Gordon Hayward's cap hold is $30 million, and that means that if Gordon does stay, then the Jazz won't have any room to re-sign any of those sign any other free agent point guards for anything more than the mid-level exception, which is $8 million a year. So, you know, your guys like Kyle Lowry, your guys like Drew Holiday, the Jazz just aren't going to have enough money to sign those guys in free agency if Gordon Hayward stays. So that's kind of why it's kind of a logical fit for if Gordon Hayward to come back, for George Hill to come back, because he's probably going to be the best point guard that the Jazz can get unless they make a trade today.
And if you don't mind looking into that crystal ball of yours, I need to ask you the million-dollar question. When tonight is all said and done, will the Utah Jazz come out as winners or losers, in your opinion?
I mean, you have to give credit to what Dennis Lindsay and his team have done during draft periods in the last, 4 years that it's been since he took over. And, you know, they came out of with either Rudy Gobert, Rodney Hood, or last year trading the number 12 pick for George Hill. All of those, I think, are wins. And, you know, it's not all wins, obviously. Trey Lyles was obviously a bust at this point. You know, I guess he still is young and still has time to improve. But Dante Exum, obviously, maybe not the pick that people thought he would be. Trey Burke, the same thing. But on the other hand, people were really lauding the Jazz for getting Dante Exum, for getting Trey Burke when they did in the draft. So at the very least, I'll tell you what, he'll either look like a winner or actually be like a winner based on how his history has gone so far.
Does Ricky Rubio make sense at the point guard position for the Jazz?
He's such a good passer and so much fun to watch. I think he would really fit in defensively. I think people really underrate what a good defensive point guard he is with the number of steals he racks up year to year. I mean, he's so smart off the ball and in terms of getting his hands on balls and making it difficult for other teams to play. But in terms of spacing, obviously, he's one of the worst shooting point guards we've had in NBA history. He can't finish at the rim. He can't shoot from the outside. And he had a good end of the year last year. And so maybe that's what you hope, is that maybe somehow he's turned a corner with his shooting. But still, he'd be a very different kind of point guard than George Hill. I don't know that he's like a great fit for the Jazz, where if given that you've got Rudy Gobert as your best player down low, it just makes so much sense to space around him. And unless, like I say, that last half a season from Ricky Rubio is real, he's not the player for that. So I think you're looking at him as maybe more of a stopgap than the long-term solution, like you may with a George Hill or a younger point guard who actually can shoot. But again, what he does defensively does fit into the Jazz culture, so I could see it going either way.
Andy, I don't know if you'll have time come Saturday night, but for those of you listening that don't know, Andy is a diehard Real Salt Lake fan. So I've got to ask you the question. Coming off an impressive 1-0 win over Minnesota, Andy, are Real Salt Lake going to continue their trend and beat San Jose in San Jose come Saturday night?
I'm just skeptical because of the road form, right? I mean, I liked what I see against Minnesota. They were also an expansion team at home that you beat 1-0, right? Like, it's that's the game that if you win any MLS game, that's the game you have to win. So I'm looking for, before I start believing in RSL on the road, I'm looking for some improvement in road form before I can really put my heart and soul into telling everyone that they're the best again.
Andy, we appreciate you. We'll be following you on Twitter for great draft coverage. Follow him at Andy B. Larson. Read him at KSL or tune in Salt City Hoops every Thursday from 7 to 9 with Andy and Ben Anderson. Andy, take care. We'll talk to you again soon.
Hey, thanks, guys.